Hello, this is Michael Steed from Kaplan Financial, and today I'm going to be talking about the pre-budget report and what it means for you, your businesses, and your clients. It's hard not to think that the economy is in tatters. The 11-year boom has come to an end, and as George Osborne famously said in his reply to the Chancellor's PBR, prudence is dead. Public sector borrowing is set to spectacularly rise, £118 billion next year. It's never been so high. And the national debt is set to double within a few years to £1 trillion. These are unimaginable numbers. This PBR was the most eagerly anticipated for years and was attended by the usual rumour and leaks, including one that the Chancellor wanted to raise VAT to 18.5%. Well, now we've had it, the PBR. It was a £20 billion so-called boost to the economy, and now we need to turn to the tax details. Let's start with income tax and national insurance, and there's no finer place to start than with personal allowances. We all know about the 10% IT band farce, and as a result, for the current year, that is 08-09, the personal allowance was raised to £6,035. For the next tax year, 09-10, the PA will be raised again, from 6035 to 6475, a rise of about £130 above inflation. But for the following year, 2010-11, the situation changes. The personal allowance will be subject to income limits of £100,000 and £140,000. So, where a person's gross income, that is, total income before allowances, is above £100,000, the personal allowance will be reduced by £1 for every £2 above that income limit of £100,000. But the PA cannot fall below 50% of its full value. On current thinking, it's reasonable to assume that the PA's full value will be around £6,800, so 50% of this will be £3,400. Let's look at a couple of examples. A has gross income of £104,000. His PA will reduce by one half of the excess, so his reduction will be one half of £4,000. His personal allowance will therefore be £6,800 less the £2,000, that is £4,800. But let's have a look at somebody else. B has gross income of £108,000, so his PA will reduce by £4,000, that is one half of the excess over £100,000. But as the reduction cannot be more than one half of the full value of the PA, his PA will be capped at £3,400. So, what about a person above £140,000 in 2010-11? There's to be a further reduction, such that the PA will be reduced by £1 for every £2 above the income limit, but this time it can reduce down to zero. Now, this rather unclear wording seems to me that, in effect, anyone with a gross income of above £140,000 will have no personal allowance at all. This will only affect the top 1% of the earning population. So, presumably in the Chancellor's mind, this will include all those evil bankers who have brought the world to its economic knees. So what about income tax? Well, the basic two-band system of 20% and 40% will remain. The Chancellor has already announced the basic rate limit for 2008-09, and this has been set at £37,400, that's up from £34,800, and that is the revised 08-09 number. The bad news continues for high earners. From April 2011, taxable non-savings income, that means salary and self-employed, and savings income, that means bank interest, above £150,000, will be liable to a new top rate of income tax of 45%. But what about dividends? After all, they've been dealt with separately for years. In the PBR, the Chancellor announced that from 2011-12, there will be three rates of tax for dividends. Dividends for basic rate taxpayers will continue to be taxed at 10%, so no change there. For 40% taxpayers, dividends will continue to be taxed at 32.5%, but for the new super 45% taxpayers, their dividend rate will be at a new rate of 37.5%. That's a rise of 5% in line with a rise of 5% on the higher rate. So what's the news on national insurance? Here the news is not so good, and it's not so good right across the board. The trouble with NIC is that the language is not very easy to understand. There's lots of UELs and earnings thresholds. So the first thing we've got to do is to remind ourselves about the language. And to do that, let's start with employed earners. Perhaps you want to remind yourself that the three main phrases for NIC are the lower earnings limit, which is the level at which a person starts to gain credits for his or her state pension, but doesn't actually pay any NICs. The primary threshold is the limit above which a person starts to pay contributions. And the upper earnings limit, that's the UEL, is the upper limit for the main rate of NICs for the earner. And above the upper earnings limit, an earner pays at the additional rate. So let's look at the bad news. From 2011-12, the main rate of NICs for employed earners will be raised by 0.5% to 11.5%. Remember, that's the primary Class 1 NICs that's paid by the employee. The employer's contribution, the so-called secondary Class 1 NICs, will also be raised by 0.5% to 13.3%, and this is only payable by employers on earnings above the earnings threshold. Remember that above the UEL, that's the upper earnings limit, the earner still pays NICs at the additional rate. And from 2010-11, this will increase from 1% to 1.5%. So what's the news for self-employed earners? Bad news too. From 2011-12, the main rate of Class 4 will be raised from 8 to 8.5%. That's clearly an increase of 0.5%. And the additional rate, formerly 1%, will also rise to 1.5%. So what do we conclude here? Although these numbers seem quite modest, they are not. This increase will affect most employees and employers, and, on the basis of the Treasury Red Book, is likely to bring some $2.5 billion per annum into the Chancellor's coffers. So, is there any news on business tax? There is. Sole trades and partnerships are likely to see some losses in the current environment, and the Chancellor has turned his mind to this issue. In the PBR, he announced an amendment to the carry-back rules for unincorporated businesses, remember that's sole trades and partnerships, for the current tax year 2008-09. But before we look at those, let's just remind ourselves what's available at the moment. An unincorporated business can carry back unlimited trading losses against profits in the preceding year and therefore claim a tax rebate. Another way is for start-up unincorporated businesses in the early years of operation to carry back trading losses against pre-trading income. That might be a job, and they can do that for up to 3 years. And lastly, ongoing businesses can carry forward losses to be set against profits of the same trade for future years. So, what's the Chancellor done with those rules? He has revised the carryback rules for ongoing businesses. And that means that an ongoing business can carry back losses not just for 1 year, but for 3 years, against the later years first. The only problem is that although the carryback for 1 year will remain for unlimited losses, any further carryback will be limited to £50,000 in total over the two earlier years. There's one other bit of news for businesses. In the PBR, Alistair Darling announced some help for people struggling to pay their tax. There's to be a new business payment support service, and the interface with customers, is going to be a telephone support line. This will enable people who are struggling to pay their tax to come to an arrangement with HMRC over the phone. According to the website, the decision-making process by HMRC will take only 10 minutes, so that's pretty swift. And this does sound like a sensible suggestion. Taxpayers will still pay interest, though, at the official rate, but there will be no surcharging, provided you've contacted them before the due date. It's worth remembering, too, and slightly tongue-in-cheek here, that borrowing from HMRC can often be cheaper than borrowing from the bank, especially on an overdraft. So this facility is something to bear in mind for struggling clients. Let's now have a look at corporation tax. One of the features of the Labour government over the past 11 years has been the introduction of ill-thought-out tax measures, which were then reversed shortly afterwards. The early years of the Labour administration saw a progressive, benign environment for small, unincorporated businesses with low rates of corporation tax and a tax-efficient extraction by dividends. No surprises then when these were reversed. Budget 2007 gave notice that the CT rate for small trading companies would rise year on year by 1% per annum from 19% in FY 2006 to 22% in FY 2009. So it's welcome news indeed that the Chancellor has decided to postpone the rise in April 2009. The CT rate for small trading businesses will therefore remain at 21%, and so for a company with profits of £50,000 per annum, that means a saving of £500 of corporation tax for the year. So what else is on the table for corporation tax? Well, there's some good news on losses, and it mirrors the rules for unincorporated businesses. For some years for companies, it's been possible to carry back trading losses 1 year. But in the PBR, Alistair Darling decided to extend the carryback period to 3 years. That is an additional two. For those of us old enough to remember, the 3 year carryback is what was originally on the statute book before it was restricted to 1 year in the 1990s. But there is a problem. The carryback for 1 year remains for unlimited losses, just like for unincorporated businesses, and the further carryback is also restricted, in total, to losses of £50,000, with the losses being applied to later years before the earlier years. So while we're talking about companies, let's return for a moment to the famous Arctic Systems case. We've spoken at length about that before. After success in the House of Lords, where the profit extraction system for a husband and wife of two personal allowance salaries and two lots of dividends was affirmed as being lawful, the government, as you will recall, swiftly condemned it and promised early action to correct the situation. Well, as we all know, the draft legislation simply wasn't fit for purpose, and under fire from all directions, the government reluctantly shelved the proposals. And that was in Budget 2008. But they promised to return to them in Budget 2009. The PBR has affirmed the government's intention to deal with that issue, the profit shifting, but in view of the economic turmoil, has sensibly decided not to introduce legislation in Finance Bill 2009, but instead, and ominous words here, to keep the matter under review. So we'll have to keep an eye on what's going to happen to Arctic systems. I'd like to turn for a moment or two to the taxation of cars. The taxation of cars, both from a direct tax and from an indirect tax point of view, have been subject to reform and continues to be so. In the pre-budget report, the next phase was formally announced. From April 2009, the rules for expensive cars will be reformed. An expensive car, you will remember, is one that costs more than £12,000. And traditionally, the writing down allowance for capital allowance purposes has been restricted to £3,000 for these cars. And of course, there have been private use adjustments where there have been a dual business and private use. I'm thinking of a sole trader here. So from April 2009, under these proposed revisions, expensive cars will be taxed according to their CO2 output. Now there's a surprise. For cars with CO2 emissions up to 160 grams per kilometre on, will be put into the 20% pool. Remember, that's the old 25% pool, which was revised downwards in April 2008. And for cars with CO2 emissions of more than 160 grams per kilometre, they will be put into the new 10% pool. And remember, that 10% pool is also new for April 2008. For expensive cars, with a mix of business and private use, each car goes into a separate pool, which is given a notional writing down allowance of either 10% or 20% according to the CO2 output, and then you adjust for the business use using the normal rules. This, of course, will be relevant for a sole trader or a partner in a partnership. You don't get the private use restrictions in companies. In companies, the burden of taxation passes to the employees. Let's now turn to the mighty VAT. It was so seemingly simple, a drop in the standard rate from 17.5% to 15%. But that opens a fairly sizable can of worms. Remember that this only affects the standard rate. There are no changes to the scope, no changes to the zero rates, and no change to the 5% rates. So, for this reduction of 17.5% to 15%, what do we need to think about? The most obvious problem is how retailers are going to deal with this. There's been lots of grumbling about the operation. Many tills in shops are smart tills and operate at the point of sale, so they are going to need adjusting. Oh dear. Such an easy order, but such a tall one. Already the retail associations are complaining to the government about the cost of the implementation of this move. Another area of worry is in terms of accounting software. Do you edit the percentage of your current VAT code, or do you create a new one, which will become the default code as at the 1st of December? After a lot of head-scratching this week, the developing consensus is that altering the code is the easiest solution. So what about the maths? If I sell on a VAT-inclusive basis, and I do want to pass the cost on to my customers, remind yourself that you don't have to, what do I need to do? Well, very simply, you multiply the VAT-inclusive cost by 115 over 117.5, and that conveniently breaks down to 46 divided by 47. Out with the calculators, or your fingers if you're particularly good. Okay, so what about cash accounting? Many, if not most, small businesses will cash account. So how do you deal with an invoice that's issued in November 2008 at 17.5% VAT, and that's paid in December 2008 after the rate change? Well, as you'd expect, and not on your side, the rules are that you still pay over the 17.5% rate. Incidentally, there's a lot of detail on this issue on the HMRC website. So what about deposits received in November 2008 and a final invoice issued in December 2008? The basic rule says that if the deposit was received before 1/12/08, then you account for VAT at 17.5%. Remind yourself the deposit does generally create a tax point for VAT purposes. But there is an option under Section 88 of the mighty VAT Act to actually use the new rate of 15% over both the deposit and the final payment and issue a credit note for any differences. So, are there any other adjustments that I need to know about? Yes, there are two that I'd like to mention, and they are the fuel scale charges and the effect of the change on the flat rate scheme. Let's deal with the fuel scale charges first. The VAT inclusive rates are announced each year and are published in the spring. It's important to appreciate that these are VAT inclusive. So, for a VAT quarter that spans the 1st of December, the period prior to the 1st of December, you calculate the VAT using the multiplier of 7/47, and the period after, you will extract the VAT using the multiplier of 3/23. Sounds a little bit complicated, and if you want a shortcut, go onto the HMRC website and look at the PBR document that covers the change in the rate of VAT. It's actually quite a fair read, not that I'm suggesting you take it to bed with you. And it's got the full table for the revised fuel scale charges in one of the annexes. Okay, that's the fuel scale charge. What about the flat rate scheme? Well, that's a bit more difficult, and I'd recommend looking at the PBR VAT document on the HMRC website, and the revised flat rate scheme percentages are published in one of the annexes there as well. Well, that's it for another PBR. The Chancellor seems to be hoping for miracles, and he's got nothing in the cupboard for a rainy day, so he's having to borrow huge sums to shore up the economy. Labour's fiscal principles have truly been trashed, and Gordon Brown's rulebook has been torn up. Poor Prudence. It remains to be seen whether it will work, but for us as advisers, the tax landscape has changed yet again, so we need to have our wits about us, as usual. Cheerio.